on in Nashua, 6 below in Berlin.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. For Manchester's newest African refugees, the Queen City must seem not just a foreign country, but a foreign planet, and a cold one to boot. Last year, more than 350 new refugees were resettled in Manchester, an 85% increase from the year before. Most were from Somalia, Liberia, and Sudan, countries war-torn with poverty, famine, and disease. And many had spent years, even their whole lives, in refugee camps. From there, they were resettled to a new world of cyber cafes, mega malls, and heaping piles of snow. The plight of Manchester's newest refugees gained more attention last year when some serious health problems hit. 3 dozen refugee children got sick with lead poisoning, and 1 toddler died. And that tragedy came amid ongoing concerns over refugee education, jobs, housing. It all led to a 3-month moratorium on new arrivals in Manchester last fall, while the city took stock of its capacity to help refugees resettle. Today in The Exchange, finding refuge in the Queen City, the challenges and opportunities facing both the newcomers and Manchester, their new home. Join us with your calls, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Joining me in the studio is Beatrice Munyanyezi. She was a refugee from Rwanda. She's been living in Manchester for 6 years. She works at the Manchester Housing Authority. And Beatrice, it's great to meet you. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
And also with us is Murenzi Murenzi. I'm pronouncing your last name wrong. Murenzi.
Yes.
Honore. He is also from Rwanda. He's been living in Concord for 2 years, but he works in Manchester for The Way Home. That's an organization that helps provide and increase the availability of affordable housing in the city. Joining us from San Diego, California, Dr. Westy Egmont. He is executive director of the International Institute of Boston. That's an organization that helps immigrants and refugees integrate into communities across New England. Westy Egmont, good to have you. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Laura. I'm also the executive director of the International Institute of New Hampshire, which is more important.
Great. And also with us on the phone from Manchester is Robert Baines. He is mayor of the Queen City. And Mayor Baines, good to have you too.
I'm glad to be with you this morning to talk about this very important issue.
Murenzi, I want to start with you. You came from Rwanda just 2 years ago. I just wonder, what were your expectations, first of all, about what America would look like?
America, when we are in Africa, we think that America is like heaven. And when we come, we think that we have everything. And easy life, many things.
Just like on TV?
Yes, just like on TV. But when we arrive, things change. We have emotion about what our lives will be, because we find that everything is different. People, language, buildings, trees, even birds are different.
Roads, sidewalks, parks.
Everything. So it's like what we expected become fair. So
it must be a shock.
A very big shock. Very big shock.
What were you expecting, Beatrice? Now, you've been here in the United States for 7 years. When you were still in Africa under, you know, horrible circumstances, trying to escape from a war, spending time in refugee camps, what did you think coming to America would be like?
Well, first of all, for me, I just wanted to go someplace where I can at least sleep and not having to worry that someone will come and grab me or grab my kids. And second, I hoped that my life would go back, excuse me, where it used to be before I left my country. And but it wasn't what I hoped for, actually. And but it wasn't really hard for me because I'm a fighter. I like to be independent. So I knew that, you know, when I came, actually, it was a period of time that I really wanted to go back where I came from because life was very, very hard.
What was so hard about it?
I didn't speak English. I couldn't go to work because I, you know, language, skills, and nothing. And most of all, I lived in a city where it was just me. I didn't see anyone who looked like me. It was just me and my kids. And it was very hard for me to have someone who can speak the same language as me. So I wondered, you know, how my life would be for me, you know, to be here. And I knew probably, you know, I'm going to spend the rest of my life here. And, you know, how am I going to live here?
And look at you now. I mean, you're speaking English, you have a job, you're...
What I'm saying, that I'm a big fighter. I like to be independent. I worked so hard to be here.
I don't want to drag you too much into the past, Beatrice, mm-hmm. but could you just give us a sense of how you got out of Rwanda in that, you know, terrible war situation?
My situation was different compared to other refugees. I was lucky to be able to have a car with my kid and my family, my husband. I escaped. I locked up my house. I left everything in there. But at some point, I thought I would probably, you know, go back in a few weeks, and I never knew that was for good.
Oh, really? You thought you would go back?
Yes, I thought I would go back, and you know, I left everything, especially my wedding dress that I wished that I could have. But I thought I would go back in a few weeks, but I never get that chance, of course. And on my way out, I saw people walking with their belongings, including, you know, sheep, cows, goats, whatever they could find, probably, or they, you know, they were able to carry. But I must say that I was lucky to, you know, be able to escape in other different way than those, because most of those who were working did not make it.
Mm. So many people were killed.
Yes.
One more question for you, Morenzi. When you heard, okay, you're being resettled into the United States in Manchester, New Hampshire, I mean, did you have any idea what Manchester, New Hampshire might be like?
No, because I didn't know that New Hampshire was a state. I didn't know it. I thought that it was a town in Boston. So...
And I think for many people overseas, they think America and they think New York. And maybe D.C. and maybe Los Angeles, and that's about it.
Boston.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's all.
Was the cold a shock?
Not for me, because I have been in Europe before, but it's too much here.
I think there are a lot of natives who feel that way, too. I want to get our other guests in on this conversation. And to you, Dr. Westy Egmont, we talked a little bit with Beatrice and Morenzi about expectations. What are the expectations that many refugees who come to New England have?
I think everybody is looking for a place of freedom, Laura. The great tragedy of human life is with some 12 million refugees in the world, almost all of them have lost everything. As Beatrice was saying, it's the wedding dress, it's every bit of their personal past. And for most of them, it's a real problem of a loss of personal security. So the dominant drive is simply to have a safe place where they feel that no one's going to hurt them or harm them or do anything to them as ghastly as what they had experienced where they've fled.
And Westy, who's coming to Manchester these days, especially in, you know, 2003, 2004?
We've been delighted to have a new group, the Somali Bantu, who've been coming from Somalia, which is, you know, up in northeast Africa, a country about the size of Texas, and this population is a small group. There are only about 12,000 Somali Bantu in the world, and Colin Powell had identified them in the State Department as one of the most persecuted and distressed populations, so they were given priority to come to the United States and spread across a lot of cities.
You know, and that leads to my next question for you, Mayor Baines. Why Manchester? Why was Manchester chosen?
Well, I really don't know the exact process that went into selecting Manchester, but we're the state's largest city. We have the infrastructure, we have housing, we have a lot of jobs, we have public transportation, all the things that are necessary for people coming to America in search of the American dream and finding opportunities to become employed. It used to be, Westy, I don't know if it's still that within 4.5 months of a refugee would come to Manchester, they would become economically self-sufficient. I think you have two examples there where they've grabbed hold of all the opportunities in Manchester and in the United States and turned their lives around. So that's a great success story of organizations like the International Institute.
His Honor is right. You know, 90% of the folks who come through the airport within 6 months are economically self-sufficient taxpayers contributing, participating in the general society.
And that, Westy, is the most important message that I would like to get out there today, because a lot of communities, and you've seen some of them in the press, by the way, I thought the union leader did a spectacular job in analyzing the issue. But some people, when they read it, they think, read a letter to the editor today, that they think that this somehow is a burden. And there are some stresses that have been well documented, and that's why we've had the moratorium. But the refugees have accounted for a lot of the economic growth and prosperity that's occurring in the city. We have some of our employees, but 16 to 17% of their employees are immigrants and refugees. It's a great success story, and it's helping people realize the American dream.
And Mayor Baines, what has the impact on Manchester been? You touched on the employment picture that immigrants and refugees, but we're focused on refugees, have fulfilled a lot of jobs in Manchester. But what have some of the other impacts been?
Well, the most significant impact has been in the public schools. Obviously, we have a very large public school system. We've had an influx of refugees. That's created a significant strain on our teaching force. We've had to hire a lot of teachers. We were mandated several years ago by the federal government to make a commitment, I think it was in the vicinity of around $2 million, to hire staff and deal with the English language learner instruction in our schools. So it's had a tremendous impact on the public school system with very little federal assistance to help us mitigate that.
And Westy, why no federal assistance or little federal assistance to help Manchester's public schools deal with all the children who are speaking different languages?
Now, we have about 1% of the school system at the moment who is that we're talking about as a population, and it's a small group, but definitely an expensive group in the first couple of months as people need to learn English. That becomes the life survival tool that's most important, and the kids do learn like sponges. It's great to watch. But this comes down to our large national philosophy, which is that education is mostly a local issue, and while the feds put a few bucks into each of the communities as emergency grants, they presume that education is still paid for by local taxes.
But isn't it, Westy, a federal decision as to where refugees are resettled?
It is and it isn't. Actually, in all the cities that are sort of equivalent to cities of 100,000, most of those cities have populations of about, 300 people a year who are settled. So it's a well-distributed population. The one part the feds are doing is trying to be sure that all of us who do this work, because we do it as independent philanthropies, nonprofit organizations, they just want to make sure that we distribute this population well across the country and that no one community is overwhelmed. So there is a responsibility on our part to try to work with community leaders and to work with the schools and health departments and everybody else to not have it become burdensome. But in truth, this is just a small part of the immigration flow into America, and it's presumed that ESL has to be taught in most any city in the United States.
ESL is English as a second language.
But also a very important part of this discussion is the state responsibility and the bill that was passed by the legislature in the 11th hour last session took out English language learner population as part of the formula to fund local communities for education, and that impacted Manchester. As you know, we lost $3.5 million. In a very stressful situation where we received last year 90% of the refugees resettled in New Hampshire came to Manchester. So there is a responsibility to educate, and our state government has walked away from that responsibility.
And 48% of the kids who need English in the school systems in the whole state are in Manchester.
Right.
And it's really outrageous that the state doesn't have a formula that takes into account the realities of urban life, or what I call gateway cities.
Let's get our listeners involved. Again, our number here on the exchange, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in the exchange, finding refuge in the Queen City. Several hundred African refugees were recently resettled in Manchester. So today in the exchange, we're looking at who they are, the challenges they face, how the city is looking at welcoming and handling this new and different population. Join us, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Mayor Baines is with us. He is mayor of Manchester. And joining us from California, Dr. Westy Egmont. He's executive director of the International Institute. That's an organization that helps immigrants and refugees integrate into communities across New England. We have two refugees with us in the studio. Beatrice Munyanyezi, she was from Rwanda. She's been in Manchester for 6 years. She works at the Manchester Housing Authority today. And also with us, Murenzi Unyere. Murenzi, I am so sorry.
No problem.
And he is also from Rwanda. He's been living in Concord for 2 years. He works in Manchester for The Way Home. That's an organization that helps provide and increase the available of affordable housing in the city. Our number here on the exchange, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. If you have questions about what life has been like for New Hampshire's new refugee population, you want to know how life has been for them or why refugees are resettled where they are, join us, 1-800-892-6477. If you are a refugee or immigrant yourself to New Hampshire, what's your experience been transitioning to life here? Again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. And Beatrice, it was talked about, especially by Mayor Baines, about children in the schools and how they need English as a second language. They need help with English. What was your children's experience in the Manchester schools? How were they helped to learn English, and how quickly or easily did that come?
When I came, my kids were little. The oldest was three.
The oldest was
yes,
three?
Yes, it was three.
You escaped from Rwanda with three children under three?
No, I had one.
You had one?
At the time, yes. And later on, I had the other two. But when I came, one was three. The two were 2 years old. So the kids learned very quick. And when they reached us, actually, the elementary school, it didn't have that much problem to learn English or have difficulties in school. In fact, they are doing very well. Because the kids learn very quick. You know, like, you know, for us, grown up, we can't have a really hard time to learn special English.
It's frustrating,
yeah,
isn't it? Right.
Yes, yeah.
And Murenzi, there were many issues that have been raised about the new refugees, the Somali Bantus that have come in. What issues do you see this group of people dealing with the most besides the language issue that we've talked about? What other problems or challenges are they facing?
Many challenges, especially skills. They don't have skills to work. They must learn everything. They don't know how to take care of their houses. So many things they didn't, when they came, they didn't know how to use stove, for example. So they must learn.
Because they cooked on an open fire.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Things like that. So it's difficult for those people to leave them in the apartment and assume that they know everything they have in the apartment. So we must teach them everything.
So you can't just say to someone who has been living in a refugee camp, you know, for 8 years, here's your apartment, have fun.
No. Because before the camp, even the village, they don't have stoves, they don't have light. So,
how do you think, Murenzi, that the Somali Bantu population, again, that has been resettled in Manchester, is different from other people who have been resettled in Manchester, such as someone from Rwanda like yourself?
I think they are not different. And what is different is the level of education. because some people from Rwanda, from Congo, from Togo, West Africa, they are educated. And most of them have been in town. While those who come from Somali Bantu, I think they have never been in the town.
Not even in their own country, never mind in the United States.
Yes. So they come from village to camp and then to Manchester in a big town. So it's a shock. It's
another planet, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very difficult for them to understand and to understand what they are going to be in the future in a while.
So at least some other African refugees had some experience with town life or even city life, but
yes.
The new Somali Bantus really just have absolutely no experience with that.
Yeah, I suppose some, yes, but not all.
Beatrice, do you want to comment on that?
Yes, I believe it depends with the background and education level, because we African, actually, we the same people, but we live our life differently. And you're not going to bring someone from, who lives in refugee camp for 10 years, who never went to school before, and bring someone who has a bachelor degree in anything and expect them to live in, kind of same situation or be on the same level in this country. So we will need a different kind of help in terms of depending on which group of people we have here.
And a different approach and a different attitude.
Yes.
It seems like you're saying, Beatrice, that people sort of lump all African refugees together, and yet one person may have lived in a camp, for 10 years,
yes.
Where another person might have been, a doctor or a lawyer working in town.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Westy Egmont, could you comment on that too, please?
Well, this is an important differentiation. The Somali Bantu, who were the dominant group now in this year's arrival, and it will only be this year, by the way, the whole population will now have arrived in the United States within the next couple of months. And so this particular arrival wave will be come and gone, sort of like the Acadians of Canada at one point in history coming down into settle in the Merrimack Valley. I think one of the things that we look at is that the Bantu have only about a 24% adult literacy rate. And that's a new challenge for all of us as providers. There's a lot that needs to be done when a population has been living in a refugee camp, most of them since 92, when the warlords were using them as target practice. It was really kind of a frightful situation they were in. They fled as a whole population across the border into Kenya. No education in the camps. They're very young families. These are sweet moms. Over 60% of them are nursing or pregnant. It is a phenomenally young, vital group that have been denied almost everything in terms of health care and education. So they've got their share of challenges to get their lives together.
All right. We'll talk more after a short break. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
More on African refugees in Manchester on The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio, and at 10 this morning on The Diane Rehm Show, a look at yesterday's elections in Iraq. 9:30, I'm Dan Cogan. Good morning. Support for New Hampshire Public Radio comes from our contributing listeners like Walter Kramer of Marlborough, Vermont. We also receive support from ML Haney Associates, speakers, trainers, facilitators, and coaches, thanking their loyal clients and celebrating 25 years of helping them unlock the power of people. On the web at mlha.com. And Things Are Cooking, featuring quality cookware, cutlery, kitchen tools, and gifts, located in the Steeplegate Mall, Concord, and at thingsarecooking.com. Proud to support New Hampshire Public Radio. This is New Hampshire Public Radio, news and information for the Granite State.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tuesday on The Exchange, the North Country economy, a new prison, new high-tech firms, and the reopening of old mills have many seeing hope in the Great White North economy. That's tomorrow on The Exchange. Right now, we're talking about Refugees in Manchester, the Queen City. Several hundred African refugees were just recently resettled in Manchester. And today in The Exchange, we're finding out more about who they are, the challenges they face, and how the city is handling this new and different population. Join us 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. If you have questions about who is coming to New Hampshire and why, what their stories are, 1-800-892-6477. If you also have questions just about the experience of refugees once they get here, or how the whole system works, how and why refugees are settled in New Hampshire and New England, again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. Two refugees join us this morning in the studio. Murenze Onure, he's from Rwanda. He's been living in Concord for 2 years. He works in Manchester for The Way Home. That's a housing organization. Also with us, Beatrice Munyanyezi. She was a refugee from Rwanda. She's been living in Manchester for 6 years. Beatrice works at the Manchester Housing Authority. Mayor Robert Baines of Manchester is on the phone with us from Manchester. And joining us from San Diego is Dr. Westy Egmont. He's executive director of the International Institute of Boston, an organization that helps immigrants and refugees integrate into communities around New England. Again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. And Westy, Mayor Baines, Beatrice, Munyanyezi, we have some phone callers. Let's go to them now. 1-800-892-6477. To Chichester first, and Lori is on the phone. Welcome, Lori. You're on the air.
Hi. I volunteer working at a after-school and meals program and then activities program in Manchester at the Kids Cafe, which is affiliated with the Salvation Army. And I just wanted to say the kids that have come in are so polite and so much fun. Right now we have a family. It seems like there's about 8 boys. Maybe it's only 6, but it seems like 8 that have come in from Burundi. And just to watch them pick up how to use the computers, and they're playing dodgeball, and they come into arts and crafts, and they, with hand signals, you can just show painting and what the project is, and they just dive right in. And I just wanted to say what a well-behaved and what a pleasure it is to know the children. So that was all. Well, I just wanted to throw that in.
Lori, thanks for calling. And Mayor Baines, it raises a question for you. How much has Manchester's nonprofit community, like the Kids Cafe that Lori mentions, gotten involved in helping refugees resettle?
Well, first of all, it's been fantastic. Follow up what Westy said about these students coming into our school system and the magical things that happened. I visited a classroom just a few weeks ago with Alderman O'Neill and went over to Hillside and see the wonderful interaction and how they're assimilating into the culture. As some of them have never been in buildings with stairs, they've never had running water, they've never been in schools, they've never had this great opportunity. And it's magical to watch. So it's one of the real fundamental aspects of this program where they're welcomed with open arms into our school system and with loving and caring people. The nonprofit community in Manchester is fantastic. I can't say enough about what happens. Organizations that Westy represents, like the International Institute, do a phenomenal job of bringing people to the culture. We have the police department that goes into the International Institute, talks about how the police officer is a friend, not an enemy, not someone to run away from. And they learn job skills, they learn technology, they learn the culture of our community. So you see that across the board, and you have organizations in the community that work together through consortiums to try to provide the vital services that are needed for these people. And plus, the religious community has been absolutely phenomenal in adapting through their religious services, the cultures of the different people that come into our community. So it's been magnificent.
Mayor Baines, have there been examples of, you know, racism, because Manchester, like much of New Hampshire, is still largely white. Have there been examples of people not being so nice to the new African refugees because they're black?
Well, I'm sure that has happened, but it's nothing that's risen to the level of something that has put us in a situation that we are concerned for the welfare of these people coming into our community. Right after 9/11, September 11th, when that tragedy befell the United States, we did have some concerns about that. And the Attorney General at the time, Phil McLaughlin, and I went over to the mosque, and I've been over there several times and even recently, to assure the people that the government here is we're friendly. The police department's been over there, Attorney General's office. But, we're seeing more and more people with their native garb on our streets. We have people riding bicycles in downtown and becoming visible in the community. And the biggest asset to what happens is in our public schools, the great melting pot that occurs, a place like Central High School. I think there are approximately 50 languages, and by the way, with all the dialects, I think, Wesley, we have about 99 different languages and dialects here in Manchester right now. And the discrimination is taking place, is minimized when you have the opportunity in our public schools for these young people to become part of our great society here. So I don't think there's a lot of that, but I defer to your two guests to talk about whether they found discrimination in Manchester or in New Hampshire at all.
Yeah, I'd actually like to ask Morenzi and Beatrice that. Morenzi, do you feel like you've been welcomed, or do people sometimes look at you, you know, what is this person doing here? Have you felt any racism as you adjust to life in Concord and Manchester?
Myself, no. But I heard that some, yes. How? Because they don't know why we come here. It's, I think, the population had to know why people are coming.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem. And as Africans, we must try to be understood, not to be out of the community. We have to talk to our neighbor to tell them why we come here. It isn't a pleasure to come. We are sometimes forced to come. So I think we have something to do as African to try to be understood and to teach American our way to live so people can understand us and we can be integrated in the community easily.
Did people's attitudes change to you once they know that you came here to escape a war? To escape death, basically.
No, when you talk to people, yeah, they understand. But when they see people in the street walking, they don't know why, with the children on their back, carrying bags and things, they don't understand. So if people understand why and who are those people, I think there is no problem. People are very nice.
What do you think, Beatrice?
Well, personally, I probably did. I didn't feel comfortable the first, years that I came here. And in fact, I had to move from Plymouth, New Hampshire, to come to Manchester because I didn't feel comfortable staying there because I didn't see, someone like me.
You were in Plymouth.
Yes, and I didn't see really any. There were probably two black people, and I was the third. So I didn't feel comfortable and decided to move to Manchester where my kid, can feel comfortable. But for me, I really live my life the way I think should be. People may feel different about me, and I just don't see that way. I do what I have to do to be able to survive. And we refugees are here for different reasons, and I believe they may not be able to, work or bring something to the American society. But I think in the long run, everybody got something to offer, and discrimination, I think, will always probably be there, if I can say that. But if we just look in a positive way, live our lives and no looking the negative impact, I think our life will be okay. But it is a discrimination. I think wherever I may go.
We have a lot of people who want to talk to you. So let's go back to our callers and go to Manchester. And Joan is calling from there. Good morning, Joan. You're on the Exchange.
Hi. Two things I'd like to say. One, that I've lived here for 40 years. My husband grew up here, so he's lived here for even more years than that. Manchester, to me, is a culturally so much richer city now than it ever was before. The diversity is terrific. It's great. I'd like to go back to the school situation. I'm also a volunteer with, I go to one of the Manchester schools. I've gone for the last, this is my fourth year. I'm what's known as a guest reader. I come in and I sort of play grandma. These children suffer not just from a lack of English skills. These children, many of them, come in with severe malnutrition, medical malnutrition. The first time I saw some of the third grade children, and I think they mostly were from Somalia, I have a 7-year-old granddaughter who looked like she was old enough to be their teenage sister. These children are tiny. I have dealt with children who have witnessed the death of their parents at the home, at the hands of rebels. A child who was deported because somebody turned them into INS, and the child sat in the classroom with the largest eyes I've ever seen in my life, crying his heart out because he didn't want to go. He had to go. These children are so, many of them physically scarred, most of them psychologically scarred or hurt or needy. This city has just a tremendous burden bringing these children into our society on a healthy basis, psychologically, physically, educationally. I think we're doing a terrific job. I think the community, the state, has to understand that this is a huge, huge problem, and we've got to start with it from the teeniest tiny children right on through.
So, Joan, even though, you know, it's wonderful to see children pick up language quickly, you're saying there are some very serious issues that should not be overlooked.
Oh, my God, yes. Social services are so needy, and in Manchester, I understand, and Mayor Baines may be able to correct me or inform me better, but I think that some of the social service workers who work with these children on as limited a basis as it is now are threatened in the number of hours or the number of workforce people who are going to be available for this in the future. So this compounds the problem.
I'd like to hear from Mayor Baines and Westy Egmont on what Joan is talking about. Mayor Baines, first, please.
Well, first of all, God bless people like that. She's doing God's work. And to hear that compassion and understanding is just, this type of program benefits because people now understand the tremendous sacrifices that are being made by the individuals who have come to America. I know a few years ago I was over at the International Institute, and there was this beautiful lady by the name of Akia who escaped from Afghanistan. Her husband was delivered beheaded to their home, and she escaped. He was a taxi driver, and he was killed by the Taliban and is now in Manchester. And those scars will never go away. We were there another night when some people from the Sudan were there, and they showed a video, and they just became totally emotional about what had happened here. So there's so many scars there, and yes, we are being overwhelmed, and it is a burden, yes, but more important than that, I look at it as an opportunity to change lives around, to let people, as generations of people came from Manchester 100 years ago in search of this American dream. We're doing it, but it needs to be better communication. We have to set up a better infrastructure with all the organizations that are placing these people in Manchester, and we have to come together as a state to address this issue. It cannot just be Manchester's issue.
Westy?
Joan, bless you and bless all the other volunteers who are in the schools and those volunteers who are working with us at the International Institute or with Lutheran Social Services or Catholic Charities, because there are so many partners who are invested in caring for these kids and for their families. I think one of the things that is inescapable is that the Somali Bantu as a population have often never even seen a green vegetable. I mean, they've literally been in living off of bags of rice that the UN HCR drops off every 2 weeks in the camp and living under a canvas tent since 92. So when they come here, their health is really a very significant issue. And we've been very blessed by the Catholic Medical Center and the Dartmouth Hitchcock in terms of the level of expertise and the Manchester Health Department working with us to be sure that there's really some comprehensive health care. But there are some substantial challenges, and most of the folks get healthy relatively fast, but it can't be underestimated that there is a recovery period that takes attention from all of us.
Let's go to Amherst next. Thanks for that call, Joan. To Richard, he's calling from Amherst. Hi, Richard. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I have a small business in Amherst, and I've noticed during the last 10 years that the face of Southern New Hampshire in particular has been changing. And I'm wondering, you know, I do see a few people that I know are not from New England originally or even from the United States, but they're from a lot of different cultures from the Far East and the Middle East. But how do small businesses going to reach out to these new communities that are forming? I mean, I know the big businesses, like the huge mega stores, can reach out to them through their TV advertising. But how do small businesses in the community reach out to these new groups that are moving into the southern part of the state?
Mayor Baines, what do you think of that?
Well, first of all, I'd like Westy to address it, but I know here at the International Institute in Manchester, a lot of employers come to the Institute and actually recruit employees right out of the Institute. And Ann Sanderson has a tremendous network with not only some of the big companies, but smaller businesses in Manchester. But I know Westy could comment further on that.
I actually want to hear from Beatrice and Morenzi on that, too. But go ahead, Westy. Richard's question, how can small businesses reach out to the refugee community?
Well, as employees, we have about 85 companies that are, you know, actively giving people their first jobs, which is really wonderful. And that means that the folks are distributed across the community and are learning different skills and certainly entering into the workforce in places where there's terrific opportunity. I think that in terms of the marketplace, it's really an interesting question that we all need to explore, which is how to be sure that we recognize this terrific new consumer group, too, because they're just starting their capital spending to build their lives. And you do want to make friends with the newcomers and make sure that they're your customer for generations to follow. And that's going to take some extra effort and creativity.
Beatrice, Richard's question again is, how can small businesses reach out to refugees? I'm wondering, first of all, the job situation for many of the refugees that you know, how hard is it to find that first job?
Well, it is hard to find the first job because skills or language, you know, nobody's going to hire you if you can't speak, for example. If you may have skills, but if you can't speak, you can't understand English, how are you going to do your job? But again, if you don't speak English, it doesn't mean that, you know, you can't do anything. There's nothing that you can do. These people have things to offer, even though they can't speak English. Most of them have done something back home, wherever they were, refugee camp, anything. Some of them have owned shops, restaurants, anything. So I think if we probably can do skill testing, see what they're capable of, and help them from there. If they have to open an African restaurant or Somalian restaurant, anything, and help them to have that kind of business, if that can make their life easier instead of sending them to the factory and after months they get fired because they can't speak, they can't do the job.
And you do sometimes hear of refugees coming who, again, were doctors and lawyers in their home countries, and then they come and, you know, maybe have to...
They have to go to the factory because they don't recognize their diploma here, they can't speak English, and therefore nobody's going to hire them. So I think if you can help those to continue their education or, you know, put them where they belong, and to some place where they're going to make $6, $7, $8 an hour. But then after they give up because, you know, they think they deserve more. But there is no, they don't know where to go. They don't know what to do.
Laura, there are also some employers like Rockwell International right on Elm Street in South Manchester that actually provide English language instruction in the workplace. So a number of the employers have adapted to that. But getting back to the original question about small businesses and reaching out even to get placements for jobs, I would urge them to contact the International Institute at 315 Pine Street in Manchester, and the number is 647-1500, and talk to Ann Sanderson and her staff about how small businesses can interact with the people who are representing the new Manchester.
Morenzi, what did you do for work in Rwanda?
I did business. and I was working with orphans.
With orphans?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And now here in Manchester, you work in affordable housing.
Yes.
So it sounds like there's some transferable of skills. It's not too big a difference
I think
for you.
Yeah, because I was working in human services, and now I'm the same field, I think.
I also heard that you speak 9 different languages, so that's probably a big help in helping refugees find housing.
Yeah, because I can talk to them, and usually I have enough time to talk, because refugees need someone to hear, to listen to them. Not only material things, they need someone who pay attention to them, and then they feel good. Because in our home countries, people talk. They have time. But when they come here, no one has time for them. No one has time to listen to them. Even sometimes, those people are working in human services. They don't have time to listen to them. So that's very, very important.
Everybody's so busy and rushed here, too, in the United States.
Under stress. So it's very difficult for them to adjust here.
Beatrice is laughing.
I'm laughing because in Africa, there's no hurry.
Yeah. I can't remember what the saying was. I was in Africa as a tourist a couple times, and I can't remember there's a saying that basically is, you know, take your time, and if it doesn't happen today, it'll happen tomorrow. And that's going to bother me now. I'm going to remember that at 2 o'clock in the morning.
I was a missionary in East Africa, Laura, for early part of my career, and running a school and getting to know this part of the world. And one of the Maasai came up to me one day, and I was a little startled because he spoke German, English, and Maasai, and Swahili. And I said, I wouldn't have guessed you to be so educated and living out here with your herd. And he pointed to my wrist. He said, I'm a free man. You work under a dictator.
And your watch.
My watch.
Now,
exactly.
What's the saying in Swahili, Westy? That's going to drive me nuts.
I don't know the proverb.
All right. Well, again, that'll come to me at 2 o'clock in the morning. Let's go to George. He's joining us from Barnstead. George, welcome. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. Thank you for having me. Listening to your guests speaking, like Beatrice and the other brother from Rwanda, I couldn't help laughing. I am from Haiti, my connection with Manchester is I teach at the University of New Hampshire at Manchester. And before I forget, I would love very, very much to receive a copy of this program. Why? Because I'm now teaching a class on Francophone cultures.
Uh-huh.
And there are a lot of facets of the African culture that I hear being transpired through what your guests were saying. For example, talk. In one of the novels that I'm covering, that was on Black Girl, a movie made by the father of Senegalese cinema, Ousmane Sembène. A young girl who was brought from Senegal to France, while her employers are mistreating her. And she said very few words. Because words in the African culture is health and wealth. By keeping it, her words, therefore she is not giving her soul to her employers or to her masters.
I see. So it's a whole, excuse me for interrupting you, George, it's a whole different cultural attitude towards talking. Do you know what can you relate to what he's talking about, Beatrice? Cultural attitudes about talking.
Well, for us African, but first of all, hi George. I just want to say that I missed you. I haven't heard from you for a while. But anyways, speaking to the African culture, when someone is speaking to you, especially when they're older than you, you really don't kind of put, you know, back in their mouth. You get a listen and speak a few words. That's how we are. And we don't really sit down on a table and disagree. And that's our culture. We don't really, we kind of... I may accept of anything that you are telling me, or I may disagree, but for me to disagree, I'm not going to show you that I'm against you.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we are.
Yeah,
that's
our culture.
Yeah.
I have one last question for you, Morenzi. Is there anything that you would just like your Americans to know?
That I'd like to emphasize this. Africans are human. They have many potentialities. They understand, even sometimes they don't speak, but they understand many things. And so... what I'd like to tell to Americans that we can feel even we don't speak.
And I'm going to be very American and cut you off there, and I do apologize. We're running out of time. Morenzi, Beatrice, Westy, Mayor Baines, it's been a pleasure having you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The Exchange is a production of NHPR, and I'm Laura Kanoy.